Humans have for centuries wrestled with good and evil, with why we humans do what we do, and how we can be in conversation with whatever is larger than ourselves about why things are the way they are in this world. This reading this morning is from the One Town, One Read book, which you have probably seen publicized in one place or another around town. Between the World and Me by Ta-Nehisi Coates. This book, if you have not started to read it yet, is written in the form of a letter to the author's son. So the you in this reading is a 15-year-old African-American boy. We are listening with different ears. And in this little piece of that story, you may remember your own heartbreak in these incidents described in this passage, your own outrage, your own wrestling with the great questions. Also, in this passage, Coates uses the word dream to mean something more like delusion than something visionary. That was the week that you learned that the killers of Michael Brown would go free. The men who had left his body in the street, like some awesome declaration of their inviolable power, would never be punished. It was not my expectation that anyone would ever be punished, but you were young and still believed. You stayed up till 11 p.m. that night waiting for the announcement of an indictment. And when instead it was announced that there was none, you said, "I've got to go." And you went into your room, and I heard you crying. I came in 5 minutes after, and I didn't hug you. I didn't comfort you. I did not tell you that it would be okay, because I never believed that it would be okay. What I told you is what your grandparents tried to tell me, that this is your country, this is your world, that this is your body, and you must find a way to live within the all of it. I tell you now that the question of how one should live within a black body, within a country lost in the dream, is the question of my life. And the pursuit of this question, I have found, ultimately answers itself. Ta-Nehisi Coates wrote Between the World and Me as he was trying to make sense of, trying to articulate his own response to the aftermath of Michael Brown's shooting, along with a number of other shootings of African Americans at the hands of the police. He takes the title of the book from the title of a poem written by Richard Wright, and he spends the book returning to that theme, to the sensation of something being between himself and the world. Something between himself and his family. Something between himself and himself. That there's an almost physical sensation of being somewhat separated. The simplest language we have for that is to say that racism and internalized racism are getting between him and the world, the actual world, and not the world that we've created. And we say that word a lot these days, hear it a lot these days, and it's useful, I think, to pause and reflect about what's happening in the inner lives of people that plays out as racism. Because the thing that I'm quite clear about is that almost everyone who's involved in a racist system feels bad about themselves. Meanwhile, everyone is a good human being, and we have to somehow put those things together. So I've thought a lot about how do we see what is beyond this system, and how do we understand that we are in a system, that nothing that's going on in the world today is a personal failing. Well, I heard an interview on the radio a little while ago now with the actor who played Martin Luther King in the movies, David Oyelowo. He talked about the experience of racism in his own life and what it was like to have ties in Nigeria and in England and then in the United States. As a young man living in England, his father had asked him to explain to him that they were royalty, but that they had left Nigeria because of religious persecution. And so at one point, his father asked him if he would like to go back to Nigeria and be king. In the interview, Oyelowo laughs, the laugh of a person who is presented with an absurd choice, because by this point, he was deeply involved in his acting career. He was living in England. He was having a life that he had created for himself, and he was being offered the chance to go back and be royalty. In the interview, he's quite articulate that he wasn't particularly interested in going back and being king, but that he realized what a difference it made in his life. For him, as a person of African heritage, to wake up in a mostly white culture and think, I am a king. Instead of waking up and thinking either, my people were slaves, or I'm involved in something that I don't know how to navigate. But waking up in the morning and thinking, I am a king. You can see how it affects your physical being. Saying that, I stand up taller, square my shoulders, act like, oh, I can take on just about anything. And if what you wake up with is, my ancestors were enslaved, it would be harder to stand up and square your shoulders and be proud and ready to take on anything, because your people had in the past been defeated. I did this experiment with language and my own physical body to think about how subtly does it affect our lives? How invisibly are our most fundamental selves affected by the systems that we're in? If part of what comes between any of us and our world is the story that we tell, and our bodies respond to that. I think about that these days as I watch a very young child developing his sense of himself in the world, his body in the world. He frequently now pretends to be someone else. He announces to us that he is one of the other little children in his classroom, or sometimes he's an animal. And you can see him sort of move his body to inhabit another story. And it's him trying to turn his mind and body into the astonishing truth that we all have different experiences and we all inhabit the world differently. So reading Coates' book, I spent a lot of time reflecting on my physical experience of being alive in the world. It's a matter of noticing things that mostly we don't notice. And living with a small child, I notice how physically vulnerable we all are all the time. We walk around being businesslike, but my little boy shows fear and joy with his whole body. It doesn't yet occur to him to hide it or disguise his being. When he's afraid, we know it. And when he's joyful, he's jumping with it. He doesn't contain himself. I know that some of that is just about physical development, but I am aware that my own body has been taught to contain itself. That having a physical body should not be an obvious part of who I am. Should be sort of the backdrop to my mind and actions. And that my inner life should not show up physically. I treat my body as a mechanism that should behave, which it doesn't always. Also, it is not a mechanism. There are some parts of it that we have learned to deal with in that way. But I think that this experience of physicality in the world is part of what it means to be white in America. That kind of containment, that kind of distance from our own physical engagement with the world. And this is how racism shows up in the way we go through the most boring parts of our days, when there aren't even any people of color around. It's a certain disassociation from our bodies, and that allows us to treat other bodies of any species as expendable, whether it's our own body or another one. I think we've been trained to treat bodies as means of production. And if that's what a body is, well, you can get a new one if you need to, right? This, of course, applies to some bodies more than others in our world, and I think you can see that at work out there. And so, having read Coates' book and having read a number of other books in the past 20 years about what are the subtle inner workings that allow us to begin to undo this system that we're in, I think that being willing to be close to other beings, to physically be connected to other beings, not just all crammed into a building in cubicles, but actually connected to each other. The more we're able to do that, the more we find that we are able to understand each other and find that common life among us. And the system, as complex and abstract as it can seem in the news, begins to just make less and less sense, and it's easier and easier to not participate. So this is the stuff that's, I think, way down under all of the political conversation and all of the social justice conversation. This is the stuff that's deeper than racism, deeper than environmental work. It's about getting to be alive while we are here, actually fully alive with other people. Because I think about half the time we're only dimly aware that there are other people actually involved with what we're doing. And so to figure out how to be present for ourselves and each other, and then to get to enjoy that being alive. Because if you have a small person passing through your days ever, you notice that there is an inherent glee in being alive. And then we get to enjoy that about each other. Just a glee that we're here. And we don't have to worry quite so much about figuring out whether other people are right or wrong, or better or worse, but just that we're here. That is the truth that the lawmaker in the story I told you about, Ebe and Soup, that is the truth that the lawmaker tries to get the soup maker to understand without telling her. That our greatest anger and shame in life comes mostly from when we distance ourselves from others. When we distance ourselves from other people's vulnerabilities, from our own vulnerabilities. And mostly we don't come up with this idea, this way of being on our own. Who would come up with that way of being? We all get trained, which is why I tell you over and over and over and over again. I think that means this is my gospel. That we're in a system, and the system does terrible things to people, but the people in the system are good. Good, good-hearted people. And we have to figure out how to be alive with each other. My little teacher, who I am talking about all the time now, is helping me learn. One of the things that he has done recently is started to observe that one of the other 2.5-year-olds in his class, who is from India, is brown. So Ronan will periodically observe, just in the middle of a day, Samrud is brown. And then he says, "What color are you?" And he's referring to himself. And then he answers his own question, "White." I don't think he's talking about race. I'm pretty sure that he is talking about what he is learning about crayons. There's a red one, there's a green one, there's a white one, there's a brown one. And you kind of check out how the world lines up with your crayons. And if you're noticing the world at all, you notice that some people look more like this crayon and some people look more like this crayon. It is my instinct to try to get him to stop talking about the fact that his friend is brown and that he is white. Like it's somehow not polite to do that. Or that it is racist, in fact, to say, "You're brown, and I'm white." Clearly, it's not a problem that Ronan can see colors and can observe them in the world. The colors are just the beauty of things. He would have to be shutting something down in his mind to not notice, to not be present to that physical reality. The desire in me to try to get him to not talk about it is where the root of racism is in me and in any of us. It's that subtle. It comes up in a moment with a conversation with a child. Two sentences, and not really complete sentences from him yet. And I am navigating my physical experience, his physical experience, and how we make space for everyone. And so I have thus far, I think, navigated this successfully with him. I have said yes to his declarations. It's beautiful when it's that easy. Yeah, that's right, you are. And I hope that that gives him one little piece of capacity to have a different kind of white identity than I have. A number of writers and thinkers on race have said similar things, that this desire on my part to have my boy, who can see colors in the world, not talk about it, is motivated by my shame about being white. And they use the word shame because shame is something that we feel about the sort of essence of our being. Guilt is when you say something wrong in a conversation and afterwards think, oh, wow, I wish I hadn't said that. You know that it's a moment, a thing that you said, and you could do it differently, and it's fixable. But the shame is when you think, I am fundamentally flawed here, and I don't think there's anything I can do about it except pretend it's not happening. So Coates is calling this thing that I'm describing to you, this let's not talk about it, let's not notice it, the great forgetting. But I think shame is as good a word as any. And it is why we mostly don't talk in our country about what it means to be white. We talk a lot these days about how African American people and other people of color have been affected by the system, but we're not talking a lot about how white people are in it and of it and participating in it in those two-sentence conversations with our children. We don't talk about how the wealth of our country is built on the labor of first enslaved people and then immigrants from all over the world. It's such an awful story that we don't want to talk about it, which is understandable. And yet, it's kind of like trying to get a small child to pretend that he can't see colors. One of the little ways that we go about this in our daily conversations as adults is that when white people are talking about people, if we talk about white people, we just refer to them as a person. But if we talk about a person of color, we either say a person of color, or we say an African-American person, or we say an Asian-American person. But we never say white person when we're talking about white people. So one of the writers who I have read introduced what she calls the race game, in which she invites people to add that word to their conversation for a week. She said it's very hard to play. So I'll invite you to try it at coffee hour because you'll all know the rules of the game. It's hard to play this game with people who don't know that this is the game that you're playing. But if you're willing to take it on, I would love to hear your experience. It's very enlightening. And if you do it for a little bit longer than coffee hour, probably, you will start to feel it physically. And it's almost impossible for me to articulate for you what you might feel if, as a white person, you identify whiteness in yourself and in other white people who you're talking about. for some period of time. I can't put it into words, but that's where the change starts to happen. That's where I think we can really get momentum on moving how we interact with our world by claiming what we are. If we're white, we say we're white, and if we're brown, we say we're brown, and if we're pink, we say we're pink. To just say what the world is. The point of this game is to get to a point where you have a visceral understanding of what it is like to always be part of a race, because our world names people that way. Because white people tend to think that we don't have a race, that everyone else does. Just like New Englanders don't have an accent, everyone else does. We often enter this as a political issue, as a issue that the government needs to take on, and as a justice issue, and it is all of those things. But really, I think for church people, this question, along with a lot of our other justice issues, starts much deeper than that part of our minds that is engaged with the news and the protests. It starts down at these places where there's some dissonance internally, where we know that there's one experience in the world and there's one truth in the world, but we're not fully living in it. Reconnecting ourselves to that wholeness, even when it's difficult, gives us access to our emotional lives, to our sense of tenderness for other humans, to our common experiences of family and love. And it moves and helps us uncover our deepest selves, those hidden parts of our own minds that we avoid and that make us whole and full and free. It is by working on these places where what we do every day doesn't match and bringing them together that we all get to be in that point where we think, I am a king, and so are you. Let us live together in this beautiful world.